You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas by the Hot Texas Swing Band from our friend Alex Dormont.
From Texas.
From Texas, yeah. Mind you. Somebody on this is going to be on the show.
Yes,
Texas,
later
right?
on. Yes.
Well, what's going on?
Well, who are our guests tonight?
Well, that's it. We're going to have Louise Carnahan with her book, Work Jerks, How to Cope with Difficult People and Colleagues.
And Revis is also on camera. Revis has just joined us as well. We'll be talking with Revis, centering on Revis in the second half of the show. But Revis, if you'd like to stay on, you're welcome to. You're here.
Thank you very much. I will.
Okay.
We'll be talking about his book, Broken Truth.
Yes, so we will be, The Broken Truth. And we're going to start with Louise, author of The Work Jerks, How to Cope with Difficult Bosses and Colleagues. And Louise, I see she's all decked out in some Christmas attire.
She is.
Because this time of the year, we like to call ourselves...
The Jingle Bells?
The Jingle Bells.
That's what it says right here.
Louise, thank you so much for joining us.
It's such a pleasure to be with you.
So we're going to start with just a little holiday trivia question, not to stump you, but do you have a favorite holiday song that you enjoy?
Yes. Oh, Come, O Come, Emmanuel.
Oh, that's a beautiful song. That's a beautiful song. What about a Christmas cookie? You have a favorite holiday cookie or cake or pastry?
There are so many. Yeah. Probably anything with some icing on it would catch the attention.
There you go. That is the best cookie.
There you go. Well, it is really fun to have you with us. And this book that we're going to talk about in greater depth in just a moment, again, Work Jerks, How to Cope with Difficult Bosses and Colleagues. And I'm going to give you a personal endorsement for this book. 2025, or if you're watching this even next year, the new year is around the corner. And this is a time that you may already be thinking about, you know, I need to make some changes in my work habits, my workplace, my work title, in my career. I could use a little spruce up. This book is written with you in mind. You may discover, like I did, that you might be one of these work jerks or more.
Yeah,
but don't worry, because Louise will walk you through it. And again, welcome, Louise.
Thank you so much,
Jim. You have a little bio.
Yeah, okay, good. The bio. Good. Louise Carnahan has said that if people had behaved well at work, she wouldn't have had a career. As it is, the quirks and delights of human interaction have been the focus of her long career. Louise has been a leadership coach, corporate trainer, and organizational development consultant. Her background includes advanced degrees in both psychology and social work. Right.
Yeah.
Glad to have you here, Louise.
So, Louise, what inspired this book? What got you to sit down and put this together?
Thank you for that question. Sometimes I wondered. Excuse me. But, you know... Yeah. I worked in organizations that provided this service to people, somebody like me, who would be able to do training in communication skills and coach and train in leadership and communication, conflict resolution. A lot of places don't have that. what I found was my clients would come to me and say, you know, I wish my partner, spouse, parent, sibling, best friend had somebody like you at work, because it's just not everywhere. So when I sat down thinking about writing this book, I thought about just having a cup of coffee with somebody. And even though I can't hear their side of the conversation, I'm hopeful that I've captured enough of it to be able to provide some really practical suggestions, which is the kind of thing that my clients liked. They wanted to know, what can I do? You know, they were smart people. They tried all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a little bit of it would work, but not everything would work. Or they just needed a starter sentence. How do I begin this conversation? So that's kind of the level I get to, is a real practical and lots of options, because I don't know the individual's situation.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a question?
I just have a statement. I thought this is a very well put together book.
Very well.
And it covers a lot of subjects. And I think all of us at one time or another have been guilty of something in there.
Or read this book to avoid it. I really like the way you've organized it. And I'm just holding up sort of the table of contents. You identify jerks, work jerk types. And you also give us some direction in the beginning of the book on sort of how to use the book. And you also give us some great suggestions at the end of the book as well, that kind of wraps it up. You cover the narcissistic and the know-it-all and the incompetent and me, the runaway train, and the poor me. I have worked with some poor me jerks. How did you come about deciding to set it up this way?
Well, you know, it was funny. I started thinking about archetypes, you know, because when you work with people over a long career, they sort of fall into some categories. You start thinking about, these are patterns that you see. And so I thought about jerkotypes, you know, what's a jerk archetype? And then, because, you know, I was trying to be clever, I came up with names. And some of them are used by other authors just, you know, because they're kind of common. Like the narcissist is a common term that's used. Yeah. And then underneath a broad category, I would put in subcategories, because there are lots of flavors within a type.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's the most, if you had to choose, is there one that is kind of the most dangerous type, or the kind you don't want to avoid that, or you don't want to be that?
I'm going to start with the avoid, if you can. I think, frankly, the most difficult in terms of what they can do to your career is a narcissistic leader. Mm-hmm. Because when you report to somebody like that, they're in it for themselves. Mm-hmm. They may have a charming personality and, you know, kind of get you into their inner circle, but you have to notice that they manipulate. Mm. They'll get what they want. And if you don't deliver, and you don't always know what it is they want, you can get kicked to the curb. So, you know, my caution for people who find themselves in that situation is, you might want to stay on the outside of the inner circle. Never divulge anything that's important to you personally, because they're not beyond using it.
Mm-hmm. That can't be trusted.
That's true. You know, I got to thinking it as you're talking, you know, somebody would come to you and say, you know, Wiz, I got this problem. How do I tackle it? What do I do? You know, if you got somebody that's taking credit for everything you're doing.
Right.
How would you instruct them?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, the first thing to find out is it a one-time occurrence, which, you know, all of us can be a jerk.
Yes, that's true.
waving my hand, yeah.
Yeah, we could all have a moment where we're maybe not at our best. But what I think of as a real, you know, work jerk is somebody who has a consistent pattern over time. So it may not be the one time the person kind of claimed your idea at a meeting. It's when they do it all the time, you know? And then what I would do with the client is really talk them through, so what are the situations in which this occurs? And tell me exactly how they do it. You know, give me the behavior, because we can use labels and they're not very accurate. So if we get down to what they actually do, then we have a chance to intervene. And sometimes it's a matter of catching the person in advance and having a little chat about it, or catching them after the third or fourth time to say, gee, I'm noticing that you haven't included the rest of us who actually participated in that. And there's some great language you can use around it. Things like, I'm sure you didn't mean to do this. I'm certain it was an oversight, but and what you're really doing is you're saying, I see you.
Yeah, I'm calling you on it. Yeah. So another type that we both enjoyed reading about was the runaway train.
It's a great term.
It's a great term.
Well, I'll tell you, those were probably the people I heard about the most. And it's not that they are bad people. You know, no jerk is necessarily a bad person. But the behavior of a runaway train is they just want to get things done. And if you happen to be in the way, they just sort of roll right over you. They don't necessarily stop to ask what you think. They don't ask for input. You know, they're just on their path. And, you know, checking everything off that checklist is the most important thing they can do. Mm-hmm. The problem is, of course, that they're relying only on their own ideas. And there are very few of us who can really afford to be solo when we're looking at the work we do and it impacts other people. So one of the other little aspects of the runaway train, I mean, truly at its height, and I did meet one person who absolutely was the highest runaway train I had ever met, is that they're not necessarily very social because they're so committed to getting stuff done. And this woman looked at me with horror when I suggested that she might say hello to people when they come, when she comes into the office. And she's like, what? Yeah. You can't do that. And I said, because you think it would take too much time? And she said, well, of course. And I thought, well, no one wants to really talk to her. Just acknowledge their breathing, right? So I just said, you know, I'm not sure that's going to be such a problem. You can keep moving, but say good morning as you walk by.
As you walk by, there's another one, the know-it-all.
Oh.
Guilty as charged.
We have all the answers.
You know, there are different varieties of know-it-alls. I think the one that bothers me the most, because I've been subjected to it, is the know-it-all who's a guru too.
Oh.
So they think that you really ought to be sitting at their feet and listening to everything that's coming down. And then you should be thanking them. And not only should you thank them, they will bring up to you what it is that you didn't do correctly in the past and how they've corrected you. That is really, I mean, to me, that's one of the more irksome. But a lot of know-it-alls can just get themselves wrapped into a thinking that they have to keep talking and telling people what to do.
Okay, so books do make the best gifts. And I'm going to also suggest, think about somebody you work with that you could put this on their desk nicely wrapped. And maybe you don't leave a card with it. You just... You know, you might need several copies, you know. Do you work with a volunteer group and you really wish that the leader of that committee, you know, just think of the people in your life that would appreciate the gift of becoming better bosses and colleagues.
I was thinking put maybe page 61 in an envelope.
Yeah, you put a bookmark. Louise, this has been so much fun. What are you working on next? What have you got coming up?
Well, I've been working on a project of kind of distilling some work advice, you know, communication advice into really brief chunks that are easily digestible, so that you can just kind of look it up fast and move on.
Yeah, wonderful. And where can people find you? And the book is available through our page on bookshop.org, but where else can they get the book?
The book is available anywhere books are sold. So it may not be on the shelf, but any bookstore can order it. It's got a traditional distribution. And I'm on LinkedIn at Louise Carnahan. That funny spelling, it looks like Carnachan.
I know.
And I'm on Facebook. My author page is L.A. Carnahan, looks like Carnachan. And I'm on Instagram at Louise C. Author.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, you know, we met you through the wonderful folks at the Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. And I know that we will continue to see you regularly at probably our monthly meetup. We want to thank you for being with us. And we're going to wish you a very happy holiday from the Jingle Bells. And we'll catch up with you next year. Thank you so much, Louise.
Thank you so much, Jingle Bells. Have a happy holiday.
Have fun.
And we're going to just take a quick moment to hear from Blue Cottage Agency. And when we come back, Rivas Z. Wortham is going to be with us, and we're off on a wild ride. Stay tuned. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience. Trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We were just talking with Louise Carnahan on her book, Work Jerks. Now we have Rivas Z. Wortham. His great book, Broken Truth.
And I think his main characters know exactly what to do with a work jerk.
Yeah, we take them out, don't they?
not a lot of discussion, right, Rivas? Well, we're delighted to have you joining us for the center stage part of tonight's show. Thank you so much for giving us some of your time tonight.
It's my honor to be here. Thank you so much. Good to see you guys.
So we have the same trivia question for you. Do you have a favorite holiday song?
Favorite holiday song? You know what? I love them all. So I couldn't pick one song to save my life. I really couldn't do it. I'm just sitting here thinking about that, and there's not just one.
How about a favorite movie?
A favorite Christmas movie?
Yeah.
Well, I have to watch White Christmas every year.
Okay.
And then I watch Die Hard. So I've got it all.
And then you watch Die Hard.
Die Hard.
I think that's what Tom Goodman said to us last week, too. Die Hard counts, right?
It is.
Well, Jim has a little bio, and then we are going to get into talking about this book.
All right. Rivas Z. Wortham is the author of nearly 20 novels since 1988. He's been a newspaper columnist and magazine contributor, penning over 2,000 columns and articles. He has been honored with 2 Spur Awards for his works in the Sonny Hawk series. He has received the 2024 Will Rogers Gold Medallion Award for his book, Hard Country. He and his wife, Shauna, live in Northeast Texas. Find him at your favorite online bookstore in all formats.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Rivas.
Welcome. Well, let's see. We want to get right into this book, which, again, sort of off the cuff, I'm just going to say, oh, my goodness, this is a thriller, and it gets you on page one, and it doesn't let you go until the very last page, which I finally finished this morning. And I would say anybody on your gift list that loves really good mystery or thriller or mystery thriller, you want to gift this book, The Broken Truth. And it is, like I say, a wild ride. Hold on to your Santa hat. Hold on to your hat. So Rivas, tell us a little bit about, just to kind of get us started, Jim gave a little bit about your writing background in the bio, but would you maybe tell us a little bit more just about how you got started writing?
Well, I officially got started in 1988 with my first newspaper column that I wrote for the Paris News. I essentially cold called them with a unsolicited newspaper column and asked them if they were interested in printing it. And they took me up on it right then. And with the caveat that I write one every week for them. And they asked me if I could do it or could do it. And I said, yeah, I sure can. And so then the next thing I know, I started writing this newspaper column that at one point bloomed to over 50 newspapers across
the world. Oh, my. Texas. Oh, my goodness.
That's great.
Yeah.
It was really doing great until the internet came in. And that pretty well killed off a lot of columnists. I had been contacted by King Feature Syndicate to become their Outdoors Dave Barry and write a national column. So, you know, the rug was pulled out from under me then, but that didn't stop me. And I'm still writing these newspaper columns now, 36 years later.
Amazing. And you mentioned one in this book, which, of course, it's just a great read. And then at the back of the book, you have some kind of one-on-one conversation with your readers. And one of the things that you kind of said was that you had a little disaster sort of with your first novel. Do you want to tell us a little bit about, I think any listening as a reader or a writer would love to know about a disastrous first novel.
Well, it was a disaster, not the novel itself. The novel wound up being published and named as one of Kirkus's top 12 novels of 2011. Mystery novels of 2011. So I was excited about that, but it took a while to get there. I started writing that manuscript on something called a floppy disk. If you guys remember,
remember.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, we're aging ourselves. We remember.
Well, I had written it that on an older computer, and I had worked on this manuscript for several years to get it where I wanted. And then the day I hit the final save and enter, for the remainder of the, to type those last two words that all writers want to put, you know, the end, I hit save and the screen went blue. And I know the words file corrupted came up. And I realized that something really bad happened because I'd never seen that before. And so I popped the disc out, took it to a friend of mine who was a tech. He said computer tech. He said he could get the information off of it and save the manuscript. That was way oversized. It was, the manuscript itself was 140,000 words. It was way too big. But he said he could salvage it. 6 weeks later, he brought me back one page, and that was all I could salvage. So I had to real quickly buy a new computer, zip drive, if you remember zip drives.
Yes.
Level. And I had to recreate the entire novel from memory and start all over again. It took me a couple more years to rewrite the novel.
Oh, wow.
it was probably the worst writing problem I've ever had.
That's
a problem.
My heart goes right to my toes hearing you say that. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So you save everything now, multiple places. You got it up on the cloud and you've got it, you know.
I have it all places, but you know what? The cloud's not infallible.
I
was working on a manuscript just a couple of months ago, and it lost a week's worth of work in the cloud somehow. We never did figure out what happened. So instead of but I backed up. So I had the remainder of the manuscript. So I had to go back and recreate that week's worth, which was, it was disappointing and frustrating, but you know, I still had it all in my head, so it went back on the page pretty quickly.
Oh my gosh. Do you have a question?
Well, you know, our first book, we briefly talked about your award for Hard Country, and that preceded Broken Truth, right?
And I'm going to need to get that book because this book, it's a standalone, folks. You can read this book and it's okay. Rebus is a very talented writer. He'll give you a little bit of backstory to sort of help you know what's going on, but you do not need
this
to read book.
This is standalone, right?
But
correct.
You will want to read book one.
Yes, you will.
Well, I hope you do. And book one is called Hard Country, and my books have a lot of truth in them. A lot of the events in there are based on things that actually happened to me or people that I know. And even down to to Tucker and Harley Snow, the two brothers that are the lead characters in this series, they are real guys that I met a few years ago. One of them I met while I was doing a talk up in Northeast Texas. We become good friends, and I found out that he was a former undercover narcotics agent for the Department of Public Safety here in Texas. as well as his brother. And they worked together, something unheard of these days, but they had to get special dispensation from the governor, Mark White, to work together undercover. And the stories that came out of those two guys were fascinating. And I thought, well, you know, I'll take their stories, mix them with mine, and sprinkle a little fiction in there, and they'll make great reads. And apparently they struck a chord with both books have struck a chord with my readers, and people seem to really like them.
Do you know anybody at Netflix that we should contact to say, hey, can we? Hey,
we got an idea for you.
Can we pass an idea on to you?
No, but we can find one though. I'll find a contact.
This story is cinematic. I mean, as I was reading it, I just felt like I was watching it on the screen. And so we think it should be, you know, it should be a series like, you know, Longmire or Dark Winds or, you know, any of those wonderful Western series out there.
Well, thank you very much. I sincerely appreciate that. And you're not the first to say that, use the word cinematic when it comes to the stuff, the books that I've written. I don't see it. You see something completely different after I finish with it. But the book in my mind is a movie as I write the manuscript. I watch it develop on the screen, and so I'm honored that you tell me it's a cinematic experience.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a very quick break. We're going to hear from one of our sponsors, Out West Shop. And it is the holiday, so you might have some shopping that you need to do. And when we come back, Revis is just going to be 30 seconds or so. We're going to get fully into this book.
Thank you.
So stay tuned. Here's a word from Out West Shop.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking to Revis Wortham, his great book, Broken Truth. But a follow-up to what we just heard.
Yes, so write this down. Get out your pen or pencil. Use coupon code GIFTS with an S, G-I-F-T-S, and save $25 off a purchase of $125 or more at outwestshop.com. Like what we're wearing? You can find it there. All right, now we are all about, oh my gosh.
Broken Truth.
Where do you want to start?
Well, we want to kind of give us a little storyline about this. Well,
Broken Truth, it's a story about corruption and power-hungry people. Not an indictment on the oil industry or the green energy. It's just about people that get the bit in their teeth and do things they should not be doing without any control. Broken Truth is about just such a man out in West Texas who is paid to solve problems with his industry, and he does it in a very ruthless way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very dark ways he solves these problems. You know, we have several kind of key subjects, and one of them is cattle rustling. What is, and we talk about that in the book, but what's modern cattle rustling compared to the old days?
Well, they don't hang people anymore for it. That's for sure, like they used to.
Well, that's a big difference.
The foundation for your question comes from my main character, the protagonist, Harley Snow, who is a brand inspector here in Texas. And brand inspectors come under the umbrella of the Texas Rangers. So Harley Snow investigates rural crimes. And whether it's farms, ranches, or anyone who is a part of the Texas and Southwest Cattle Raisers Association comes under that umbrella. So Harley investigates these crimes. And one of the crimes he is investigating throughout this book is cattle rustling. It's still a problem. People are still backing trailers up and hauling cattle off from ranches, large ranches, or ranches where the owners are not out there enough to keep an eye on their stock. But a lot of the thefts these days are blue collar crimes or computer crimes that's something completely different than the old rangers would even think about back in the old days. No one would think you could steal cattle with a computer, but it's done all the time.
Yeah, well, and you have an incident with
yes, he
gets a call from somebody who had bought online.
Yeah,
did not receive the goods, did not get the cattle.
it happens. It happens in all ways. It's not just cattle. It's in a lot of things. People will sell you something and we get the money for it, and you'll never receive it. And that's just another aspect of the new way of cattle rustling.
Yeah. And let's see. There's just so much to talk about. Okay. So, go ahead.
Yeah. Why don't we talk about technology a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
We get into some really sophisticated surveillance systems here in this book.
We do. And that's an offshoot of the first book, Hard Country, in which Tucker Snow finds out that our vehicles are mining the information that is in your cell phone. And we found this out the hard way and the true way when our family ranch was broken into and robbed, and someone stole one of the trucks off of the ranch up in Oklahoma. They partially convicted him on the fact that he'd gotten in with his cell phone. He needed some getaway music apparently to steal the car or the truck. And so he downloads his music and he's listening to his own stuff on the radio. Well, when they finally catch the guy and get the truck back, then his information is in the truck, proving that he'd been in the truck and stole it. And what that's part of the storyline is we don't realize what our phones do once we get into a vehicle these days. They download all your information. They download anything that's on your phone goes into that computer and it stays there. They say that it doesn't, but I have it on good authority that it does not get out or it doesn't leave with your phone. It stays in there, and people that have rented cars have found that out the hard way sometimes. So, you know, they'll even watch your driving habits through mm-hmm. these devices. So part of the technological aspect of this book is the fact that we're watched on cameras wherever we go, and we're also watched through our phones.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we learn pretty early on, Tucker Snow gets in he has a fairly new truck and it's pretty deluxe. He's not really happy because he'd rather have an older style. But he gets into a kind of a gunfight, and that truck goes through quite a beating. But that's when you sort of are first introduced to what these vehicles today have and all of the engineering that goes into them that we don't really, you know, I don't think we really think about it.
Well, we don't realize the tracking that's involved in our vehicles either. I mean, if you drive down streets or roads, you appear on a camera and then you disappear on the camera. So your route or your routes can be tracked by anyone with the ability to get into those systems.
And then there's another tracking device that gets used.
That one kind of popped up as a surprise to me. one of the characters that starts out as a antagonist kind of swings over to the good guy side.
He does.
Finds out that when he was in the military and when he was joining up with this organization that's trying to keep some secret oil industry secrets hidden, that he had a tracking device implanted under his skin at one time. And that, you know, not saying that anyone's being implanted for sure, but you and I talked about this earlier, that, you know, these young men and women in the military get shots over and over again when they go overseas. And a lot of times they don't know how many times they've had one particular inoculation. The records aren't well enough kept. And so, you know, that's, in my mind, in some writers' minds, you might think, well, hey, well, as long as we're giving them this inoculation, let's just put a little tracking device in this person.
Yeah. And he doesn't know. But he's very smart. He's been sort of the assassin guy. So he knows how to do everything covertly, and he knows how not to be tracked. And yet they seem to be tracking him. And he has this yacht, you can just see him, the cloud over his head, if he were a cartoon character, having that, yaha moment, like, oh, I must be there. I must be, it's not in my clothing. They're tracking me. How could it be? And I, as a reader, I was like horrified,
And he goes to a friend of his that knows about these things, and they can remove that device. Yeah, that was a little plot point that popped up, a little twist that I didn't expect. I didn't see coming myself.
I think you don't see a lot of things coming. Is that right, Revis?
It is true. I don't outline. I don't plan. So when I start a manuscript, I put my fingers on the keyboard and just start writing. As you said, it's like turning on a TV or a movie and watching it happen. And that's what I do. So twists, plot points, little surprises, even different characters that walk on and off are completely unexpected to me. I see them as the reader sees them, which, I think that makes it a little, it's fresh for folks that can see what pops into my head that I sometimes have no control over. And then I will just follow that line or that character or that particular thing, such as the tracking device, to its end to see where it goes myself.
So one of the things that also comes up throughout the book is we have rural country folks, characters that are very much, generations on the ranches living the rural life. And then we have Mr. Cross and Kim Shale. Thank you. Soil I saw in my head, and we have the more business, and he's always dressed very impeccably and such. How was that for you as a writer to introduce these two very diverse worlds?
Well, that's the dichotomy of our world today. In 1941, when we entered World War II, this country was about 80% rural and 20% urban. That's flip-flopped today. And so those numbers are dramatically different. And so I wanted to take a look at the difference between rural folks who live off the land and live outside of the concrete jungles, as opposed to the people like Mr. Cross, who was raised in the country, but he moved to the city and became a city person and became a bad guy, doing things he shouldn't be doing. And at the same time, while he's doing that, he knows better. He knows where he came from. And so he's having to deal, I have the bad guy dealing with some luggage too. So, that all works together to let people take a look at two different sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Cross, bring up Cross. He's an interesting guy, very nattily dressed.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to have unlimited crew that appear all over the place that are totally military trained. And it's just kind of interesting. It's good when you're up against this guy, you got a problem.
Well, and they're trained so well. In one scene, they're just coming out of the woods, and Harley. These aren't spoiler alerts. These are why you want to read the book to find out how they get through these moments. But Harley and Tucker are, and they kind of think they know how many people, but suddenly there are a lot more that they're up against. But Mr. Cross, he just puts his. It's like they're trained dogs. He puts his hands out. They know what a certain motion that he makes, that means, stand down or and I think, wow, how much time does he spend with them to teach them this is what I want you to do when I do these things?
I love that you get that out of the book, because some of that stuff is so subtle, it kind of slides in there without much thought. But you're picking up that Cross has a crew of killers, and he has unlimited funds through this company that is, that's making money all over the world through oil, And especially down, even in, down in South America, down there. And I've researched that there are teams down there that are just much like this military organization that Cross covers. And their job is to protect the oil and pipelines down in South America and by any means necessary. So, again, you know, like what writers do, we look at something and we think, well, that's pretty cool. Let's bring it up here and let's plug it into my book and see how it works.
Well, you know, he had all those cleanup crews. I mean, not that he would order them, but they were just so well oiled. It's like, well, you know, and you know, we got three. They don't say bodies. They talk a little bit in code, and the next thing you know, up comes, you know, a truck, and right away. And I think, oh, the cold cases for the local police must really, they must have like stacked, wherever Cross has been, there have to be stacks of cold cases.
I tell you, those cleanup crews.
Missing people reports. And
so yeah. Cleanup crews are well-trained too.
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah, and hopefully that's that, you know, they're doing their job. But that's the story of compartmentalization, where you have one guy that has power that other people are not supervising. He does what he wants to. And so then he hires the people to do that, who hire the people to do the next level down. So it's kind of a vicious ladder from from the ground crews all the way up to Cross, who only answers to the bosses of the oil industry.
Yeah. We're going to take another break. Because books make the best gifts. And you want Revis's books. So take a listen to our Out West Shop, bookshop.org affiliate page. Little ad. And then when we come back, Revis, we're going to call out some character names and have you talk to us about some of these people. Okay. So don't go away. We'll be back with more with Revis in just a moment. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. And we're talking to Revis. Revis Wortham.
That is a tongue twister, isn't it? Rendezvous with a Writer with Revis. That sounds pretty good.
I like
everything the tongue twister with me.
So we're talking about The Broken Truth, and it is filled with interesting characters for sure. So who comes back? Do you want to tell us anything about maybe returning characters from the first book?
We can talk a little bit about that because it's kind of an ensemble cast that moves from the first to the second. It's Harley Tucker Snow, who is the older brother. Harley's kind of the loose cannon brother that you really want on your side, but he was the guy that stood out in the hall in high school or middle school and elementary school all the time. Mm-hmm. So we have those two brothers, and then we have Tucker's daughter Chloe, who has a recurring part in the movie, and there are a lot, they're kids too. They're kids in this. I always include kids in my books. Kids have very strong my characters have strong family roots, and so you'll see the kids and the family in the first book show up in the second, and then you know, we got Gemma, who was a little girl that Tucker rescued in the first book. She makes an appearance in the second. But mm-hmm. characters just show up in my books. They walk on stage. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'll tell you this for the mm-hmm. truth. I don't write down characters. I don't create them on paper before they get onto my screen on my computer. They walk on fully formed, and it's a subconscious thing that I have no control over. They will appear. They will sometimes they do their job and they leave. Others, like characters that I had in one of my Red River books, Tom Bell, he showed up. I tried to kill him off in the third book. I got so much grief from readers that I had to figure out a way to bring Tom Bell back. and he wound up with his own novel. So, you know, sometimes characters will try to take over, and I have to put them off to the side and into another book later on down the road. But they all walk on. They all have their backstory that I have not consciously created. Mm-hmm. I just bring them into the story as it evolves.
Well, and also you do something very interesting as a writer. We see a lot of the story through Tucker Snow's, his first person. But then, you know, typically if you're just doing first person, you only, as a reader, you only get to see and know what the character is telling the story. But in this case, we are also getting third person. So we're getting a very full storyline. Is that just normal for you? That's just how it goes?
I have to write like that for the most part on these books. I have no control over this at all. I love writing in first person, but as you said, first person is very, it's hard to tell a complete story in that viewpoint. So I will break the rules, and I break rules all the time. I have permission to break writing rules from Miss Linda Adams, my high school creative writing teacher. So, you know, she told me, do what you want to do, break the rules and write, which is what I do. And I've been told by some professional authors that are very well known in the business, you can't jump from first to third. But my reviewers seem to think that's wrong. And I'm getting good reviews from the professional organization. So, yeah, I move back and forth so that you can see the full content of what I'm writing. And, you know, after a while, you don't notice the jumps as that much. All of a sudden, you'll see, oh, I'm back with, you know, seeing the world through Tucker's eyes. But the next thing you know, you're with Mr. Cross, the antagonist here, and you're seeing what makes him the man he is. Mm-hmm. So I think looking at it from two lenses adds to the richness of the story itself.
I'm looking at time. We only have time to maybe call out one name. Well, who do you want to ask about?
We quickly asked about these two guys. Oh, they're like twins, you know, sort of. Bill Sloan and Fred DeBelk.
They're like the opposite of Harley cattle rustlers, and, you know? And Tucker. But
they're kind of likable guys. Very likable.
Well, you know what? And you like bad guys to an extent. You know, these are just country boys that are trying to survive, and they one of them served his time in the military. He came back, and he's just trying to survive some issues that came about while he was over there. Some illnesses that he picked up while he was overseas. And so you see these two guys that are not nice guys if you were hanging out with them, but they're criminals. They're breaking laws. They're stealing things. But really bad is the team, the other team in there with that's run by Mr. Cross.
Well, again, readers, you will want to read this book in order to meet Kevin. We won't tell you who Kevin is, but you will want to meet Kevin, and you will want to meet Strap, and you will definitely want to meet Chloe. And it's just a full-on cast of engaging characters and wonderful dialogue. You write really good action scenes, but you also write really, really good dialogue.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I try to keep the dialogue as real as I can for our, you know, for the area I write about. I want to keep that Texan flavor in there. And you're going to love Strap. Strap is a walk-on character, and he tried to take over also.
Yeah. Okay, so Mr. Wortham, where can people find your books, and where do they go to follow you?
All right, you can find them at any dealer, any online dealer. You can order them off of Amazon or whatever bookstore that you prefer to order them from. You can also go to my website, RevisZWortham.com. And there's a link in there. You can go find the books on that. You'll also find me on Facebook. There are two Facebook. One is Revis Z. Wortham, and the other one is Revis Wortham. Go to the Revis Wortham. Mm-hmm. That's the one we have a lot of fun with. I've almost 5,000 followers, and a lot of interaction out there with readers. That it's a real hoot. So those are the best places to find.
Okay. And we apologize. We've been mispronouncing your name. Sorry about that.
Yeah, you didn't correct us.
Yikes.
I don't even think about it. At 70 years old, it's been mispronounced so much, I don't even think about it anymore.
Well, Jim has a little quote. We're just looking at time.
Two or
maybe.
What? You know, this is from it's a long time ago quote from William O. Douglas, a former U.S. Supreme Court justice. He said, "We are rapidly entering the age of no privacy, where everyone is open to surveillance at all times, where there are no secrets." And that was 40 years ago.
And we're now quickly getting there.
Yeah.
Now we're in the book here. And this is Tucker Snow. And he's talking about his little brother. Harley glanced down at the man's sprawled body, which lay still in death. "Two in the engine room. Good shooting, Tex." And Tucker would say, "He's always been glib, but what would some would say was the wrong time. But that was the way my little brother dealt with mayhem and death. After that, he'd have a steak and a beer and sleep like a baby. I'd be in bed that night, reliving the past hour and swallowing down nausea and guilt."
And there they are, Tucker and Harley.
I think that tells Harley the way he is.
We are out of time. What do you want to say?
Next week.
Oh my gosh. Okay, next week. Ann Hillerman will be with us. We're so excited. We'll be talking about her book, Lost Birds. Do join us. And we thank Louise, and we thank, say your first name again. I want to get it right.
Mr. Wortham.
That's it. That's my dad.
And we will see you down the trail. And remember,
it's always a great day
out west.
Thank you.